got married, and we'd been to their home, and they'd been over here to us.
You're close.
We're not writing to each other every week, and when anything happens, like there've been a lot of emails flying around this past week or so because of the death of our colleague in Lure. And that was comforting to me because I sort of sent this email to about 28 blokes, and 22 of them immediately replied, and the bond there is strong.
And it's wonderful with email these days to be able to keep that contact up,
which
in the past would not have been the case. So you arrived back at the base. I should imagine very much like Shackleton arriving down at that base after climbing down the mountain. What was your feeling?
Funny. We'd had to, because we were so fed up, and we'd finished up only about one night, about 6 miles away from base, but it was getting dark and we couldn't go on. So we, first thing in the morning, we were up and away, and we arrived back at base very early in the morning, and people were just about getting doing their normal working schedule, and
weren't they worried about you by now because you'd thrown the radio away?
That was a bit the radio didn't work, that's why I threw it away. But that was a bit disappointing as well, and that's another story because I'm not happy with the new base leader. Mm. He didn't seem to
be concerned.
No, and we knew that he was on getting on the radio and talking to other small parties that were working out from near. Mm. Much nearer the base. But he had arrived on base in the January and he'd never once come on the air.
To you?
To talk to us, yeah. The radio operator would come on frequently, but he didn't. Never understood that.
That's weird. Mm. That is really strange. It's as if he hadn't met you, therefore you didn't exist.
That's right. When we got onto the base, first thing we did, of course, take the dogs over to the dog spans and
what's a dog span?
Where all the dogs are spanned out
on their chains.
On their chains there, and we were unbuttoning. I can remember sort of unclipping the dog to put it on, and this guy turned up and said, "Oh, hello, I'm so and so. I'm the base leader," and I didn't say anything. Cool, because I was not happy with him.
No. Mm. No, that's really poor. Mm. Really, really poor. Mm. When something could have happened to you people out there. Well, yeah, I don't like to think about that.
And the feeling when you got back on base, we'd sort of been looking forward, the ship's been in, there's been a lot of mail for us, and probably parcels of goodies and whatnot, and everybody's, a lot of the people we didn't know because half the base had changed over, and we're these strange people who suddenly arrived, and we didn't quite fit in because the dynamics of the place had moved on.
You were strangers, you were aliens.
That's right. Even people we're just there at a coffee break, and so everybody's there and a lot of talk, and then they all went off to get on with their work, and we went into the lounge room. And neither of us could sit on a chair. We hadn't been sitting on chairs. We were used to squatting
on the floor, on the ground.
On the ground, on our sleeping bag.
Yes.
And so we're squatting there, and I was thinking, well, we don't fit in here. Of course, you gradually...
Gradually, you come back.
Yes. Yeah.
But at the time, I can imagine, you must have felt very much like you were aliens in that environment. And as you say, it takes time to build a camaraderie going.
Yeah,
you were outsiders.
Yeah, we were. Because there were in-jokes that we didn't understand, nicknames that we didn't know about. And
you don't like to show that you don't know it,
so you don't ask
questions. You just listen and try and observe it and then come back later. So when did you leave the base? Now, you're coming back in...
We came back in middle of April... And we didn't leave until the following January. But See, in the next September, then there were other parties going out, and we were sort of the backups going out there, but then coming in again.
Mm.
And I had to go out with a small party to rescue one of the muskeg tractors that had been broken down and had to be left in the field. And so I had plenty to do. And plenty of more trips out into the mountains and do those things.
So that's what kept you busy until you could go home. Mm. Oh, okay.
And it was on one of those, the last one coming back, where I said that was the higher one for me, which I had nightmares about. You know,
when you had to be responsible for deciding where the tractor was going to go.
Other times, but it was this particular one, and I knew it was my last time out.
And you sort of had a feeling.
Yeah, especially having lost men the time before, and everybody was on tenterhooks about it. Yeah.
Mm. Mm. Horrible responsibility, one that you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy, actually,
yeah,
that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, it turned out well.
Yeah, it did.
It did. So, we bring you back. Where are we going back to?
I went back to London.
We get you home after 5 years away.
Yeah, I popped home Christmas of 62, 63, was it?
Oh.
Whatever, yeah.
You'd flown home, had you?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, flown home and then went back out on contract to the school. And I got a job in the Midlands of England, working at a company, Bachelor Foods, that do surprise peas and beans and things like that.
Dehydrated foods.
Yeah. So I was...
Good grief, what's that?
So I was... working there, and I was happy enough there. I had a lovely girlfriend there, but things didn't work out on that score. And not to any fault of one or the other, it's just...
Went the right people?
Yeah.
Right time, wrong time?
Yep. And then I thought, well, perhaps I'll go to Australia now.
Car out in the light, have you?
No, not I, no. And then I came out here, met up with this friend Brian, who died last week, and worked with him on the seismic survey and in the city. Met a girl here, a Dutch girl. And we had a baby girl, but that wasn't going to be, you know, that wasn't the right time. The only good thing about it was my daughter, and I saw a lot of her in those early time. And, in fact, she used to come to me every weekend for a long while.
After you split up?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I was living on my own at Greenwich, and I wasn't meeting anybody, and I wasn't really too bothered about that either. And then one Sunday, by this time I got myself sorted out enough that I knew that I wanted to continue being a Catholic and go back to my roots in that respect. And in the church notices, that there was a little item there saying that there was going to be a meeting of people who are single parents, either divorced, widowed, whatever, in the parish. And there was this first meeting in October 78, I think it was, and about 16 people turned up there, and a mixture of men and women in the church hall. This was rare in those days that the Catholic Church anyway would have this sort of thing. I mean, priests, Pat said that they tried earlier to set up something like this, and the priest there said, no, I don't want anything where men and women who mightn't be for you to marry can get together. You know, that was the attitude. So anyway, we had a more enlightened man there then, and that was a good group because we were not there as a matchmaking thing. We had a social evening for the pair, the adults, once a month, and we had once a month a time when we would go with our children or the ones available, and we'd have an outing of some sort. And this is how I met Pat. And
very much like parents without partners.
Yes, yeah. There was definitely it was good, certainly for us, that it was based around our church community, so we were seeing ourselves outside of our meetings as well. And I remember in the February of 79, at the end of a meeting, I was standing talking to three ladies, myself and three ladies, and there was Pat, and myself, Patrick. And I said to them, "Look, we should all go out on St. Patrick's night together, just for fun." "Oh, yes, yes, yes." And about... oh, some weeks later, getting nearer to sort of 17th of March, St. Patrick's Day, I phoned up one of the Pats and I said, "Oh, do you remember me making that suggestion?" And she said, "Yes, I do." I said, "Do you think the other Pats remember?" I said, "No, I shouldn't think so." So Pat and I went out on St. Patrick's Day, that 17th of March. Then we were seeing a lot of each other after that, and
she had how many children?
Two boys.
Two boys.
Chris was 10, Damien was 8. See, she was just pregnant with Damien when her first husband was killed in a motor accident. So she'd been a widow for quite a while.
Mm.
And she would be making noises like, "Oh, if I'd met anybody that I wanted to marry, I couldn't possibly marry them for a couple of years until the children got used to it," and all this sort of thing. So, anyway, very shortly after that, we got engaged and we were married in the end of September that year. And that's our story.
So what happened to your daughter?
Well, it was difficult with the children to start with the two boys and with Duca, which is a terrible name because her mother is Dutch, and it's an awkward name. She would come to us at weekends, but the boys being boys, they were in their home.
She was the visitor.
Two of them, both older than her, only a year or 2 years, but you know, that's important at that time. And she was a girl, you know, that she had everything against her. And that caused a lot of friction. Then as she got into her teens, she didn't want to come over and... we were drifting away. But that, when she was sort of, must have been after she did her nursing, she went to England and stayed with my mother there. And my mother had been out a couple of times, and she knew her grandmother, and they really clicked. And so when she went to England, she stayed with Gran for quite a while, and they got on
well really
together.
Well.
And then gradually, and you know, there are probably faults on both sides. She's part of our family now. She's married. She's married to a Jamaican guy, So we've got two lovely frizzy-haired grandchildren. And all the kids get on well together, and they all sort of, they can laugh about it now and say, oh, yeah, we were absolutely attached to you and
yes.
whatnot. Because the two boys are, Chris is 42, 43, Damien 41, and Duke is 40. So they're all grown, well and truly grown up now.
Yes.
And all the grandchildren, they all sort of, everybody's part of the family. They're all cousins. So.
They're all cousins, and they're all getting along very well together.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a hankering to go back to Antarctica?
No.
You'd done it. You'd finished it. It was done. It was a part of your life that you were happy with, and you were happy to let it go then.
Happy, not... Yeah, that's right. Except that I still have a great attachment to everything Antarctic. I still have this... fairly close relationship with a whole group of guys who were there. I mean, every so often we'll get somebody passing through Sydney, and then they'll...
You'll get together.
Yeah.
There's a link, isn't there?
Oh, there's a link, yes.
A bonding.
Yeah. And yes, I feel that very strongly.
When you came back from Antarctica, what did you decide your career was going to be? What did you want to do?
I have no idea. No idea. See, when I came here, after doing the... spending about a year and a half or so on this seismic survey, I got a job with... that was a very big company at the time, Crothall Holdings, in commercial cleaning. And in fact, they sent me down to Adelaide as the manager down there, and I spent almost 3 years there. And that was at the time when everything was going wrong with my previous relationship with Chuka's mother. And they came back to Sydney and to see if I could get anything out of this relationship. I came back as well, which sort of ruined my chance with that company, and I ended up then working with the Department of Health in looking after cleaning services and all sorts of other services in Central Sydney Area Health Service. I'm based at Royal Prince Alfred, and Balmain Hospital, Concord came under us, and a few other hospitals. So that
looking after the managerial side of things.
Yeah, nothing to do with nursing or whatnot. But then,
was it a good career?
Oh, look, I enjoyed it most of the time. I was always happy when I was with the people. And I used to... Something happened last Christmas. There was the department that I had, and my staff there, they were having a Christmas lunch, and I was invited there. And one lady came to me and said, oh, do you remember me? And I said, yes, I do, but I can't remember the name. And she filled in a couple of details and then said, I remember you very well because I came to see you one day and said, I'd been beaten up by my partner and you were very sympathetic and you had said to me, you've got to get out of that relationship. And she said, I did. I moved out straight away. I'd forgotten all about this. I couldn't remember it at all.
But I
came back home and I said to Pat, it really makes it worthwhile for me to know that I've helped somebody in that way. And a couple of other little things, that's not a little thing, but a couple of other things like that. And that's the sort of thing that keeps you going.
Something that Graham and I always try and do is say to people now when they've been instrumental in our lives is to tell them. And it makes such a difference.
It does.
Because we really have no idea the effect we have on people.
That's
and it's true. Only by them telling us that we have any conception of where it leads. And that's a lovely story. It's very, very nice. Mm. Yeah. So you and Pat now have been married, this well, not mixed marriage, because it's not a mixed marriage, but a marriage,
melded.
A melded marriage, and it's been a very successful one.
It has, yeah.
Lovely.
And one of the best things that happened to in our marriage was when we got married, although we were both, Pat was just 40, we did want a child. We certainly wanted a baby, and if we were lucky, we'd actually get two if we asked about
it. Yes.
It seemed it wasn't going to happen.
Because she was 40.
Yeah, because she was older. And anyway, and we... Luke was born in 83. Luke was... He was the thing that pulled everybody together, the kids and so on, because they all loved Luke. I mean, and he's for the grandchildren now, Uncle Luke. I mean, he's fantastic.
He's the idol of everybody's eye.
Yeah.
He was a very special one.
Oh,
he was, as you say, the uniting one.
Week last Friday, yes, it must have been then, Pat and I had been doing bit of shopping at Macquarie Centre, and we came home about 10:30 and in the morning, and started walking down the drive, and Luke starts walking out. He's supposed to be in London. Yeah, of course. why are you here? And it seems when he went to England, he had a return ticket, but he had to use it. He couldn't trade it in or get his money back or anything.
Luke's how old now?
He's 28 now.
Yes.
And he needed to renew his driver's license. So he thought, I'll go home and use that ticket instead of wasting it.
Mm.
And then he could pay his fare back again. So he just turned up, and we didn't know. And then towards the end of the day, he went to where his girlfriend lives or works, met her outside, and poor girl. I think it was a cruel thing to do to
her. It is. She must have been in shock.
She was, but yes. She's delighted as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's going to stay?
Oh, he's gone back to...
He's gone back.
Oh, no, I think he's having serious thoughts now about...
coming back.
I don't think we should have this on
that. We don't need to go down that. No. Is there anything else particularly about the Antarctic that you would like to put down as a record? Have you listened to the stories, the oral histories and the stories, and read about the Antarctic, the British Antarctic expedition?
Not their ones, no.
Mm.
No, I haven't.
Right.
Now, did you get that on the... by Googling it? Or has it
I Googled it. Just Google it.
So what do I Google?
You just Google British Antarctic Expedition Oral History Project.
I listened
to some of the stories. I listened to one about whiteouts. I listened to ones about the dogs.
Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to see
who's on those. Exactly.
I know one guy who has been on it, a guy, Tony Baker,
mm-hmm.
A Liverpudlian guy. Mm-hmm. I know that he had been invited to do it. Others I don't know. I mean, I probably know names.
Your grandchildren must be fascinated to hear your stories about Antarctica.
I don't think they really know it much. Annika, our eldest one, she's 12, and I've spoken at her school, her class, and she's terribly proud having me there. But for the others...
How old are they now? How old are the grandchildren?
There's two boys, both 10. They were born 2 or 3 days separated. Lucy's 8, 9. And then there's Claudia's 4 or 5. Another one 4, and Max's 2.
So they're quite young.
They're quite young, yeah.
When they get a little older.
Yeah.
Older. Yeah, I think Yes, I think just a little bit young. Is there anything on your cards that we haven't covered?
I don't know.
Just have a quick look through those. We can always put it on again and we can finish off the recording then.